From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report. It's the last trading day of the month, January the 29th, 2021. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, we'll be joined by Eric Snodgrass to explore the weather forecast not only in South America as they get halfway through their two seasons in Brazil and halfway through their one season in Argentina. And we have a wintry mix across North America, the Midwest, and into the East Coast. He'll explore all of that. He'll discuss all of the implications on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for Friday finished 12.5 cents higher at $5.47. The May contract at $5.47.5, up 11.25, and December futures at $4.45.25, 6.5 cents higher. Soybeans March contract $13.70, up 16.75 cents per bushel. The May at $13.67, up 15.5, and November $11.43. 11.75 cents higher. Bean meal up $3.90 at $431, and bean oil at $44.62, 3 cents lower for the afternoon. Wheat futures soft red at $6.63, up 16 cents, and the hard red at $6.38, that finished 12 cents higher for the day. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the lead February at $115 and a nickel, 95 cents lower. The April at $121.85, down 85 cents. And feeder cattle in the March at $137.72.5, or $2.07.5 lower. Lean hogs at $69.80, down 15 cents. The outside markets show us the crude oil in the energy sector currently trading 9 cents lower at $52.25 a barrel, and the U.S. diesel fuel at $1.60, just about unchanged. Mike Zuzla at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to discuss the Friday trade. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. What a day in Chicago it was.
Yeah, nice way to wrap up the month of January, Todd, especially given that we're starting to see quite a bit more precip in both South America, and we're actually starting to wind down the drought monitor a little bit at a time now, it looks like, based upon Thursday's update, and quite a bit more liquid and frozen precip on the way, it looks like, for dry areas of Iowa and Illinois and Indiana here the next 10 to 15 days. So good way to keep the demand bull in charge. It's interesting because, you know, a lot of questions this week have been about the corn purchases from China. Clients wondering exactly why they're doing it. And I think first and foremost, the need is there because of their own domestic supply problems and crop problems last year. Secondly, I think they see the problems with the second crop Brazil corn and also the problems with Argentina's corn production. Third, I think it's a logistics issue because this looks a lot like corn purchasing that right now looks a lot like what we saw up the last 4 months of soybeans, where they were buying a decent amount of corn, but it was really all about the soybeans. Now the corn has come on. I think that has to do with getting boats and ships and getting it out of the U.S. ports and over to the Chinese ports. They couldn't buy both at the same time, given the quantities they're looking at.
And that would be typical of the export out of the United States, that either one or the other is typically being loaded, and they sort of have to wait their turn. Given that, we ended the week with new contract highs in the lead option March corn. That should make next week interesting, I would think.
I think so, too. I think also the interesting point here is that while the March indeed did get up to new 8-year highs and has a big bar to get above at this stage, because that 2013 bar, monthly bar, lower, you know, you could go all the way up to $8 and not be able to make a new 2013 or take out the mid-2013 highs at this point because of the price action we saw during that time period. But notice the December corn is only, not only is it still about 20 cents away from its contract highs or its most recent highs. And I think this goes back to the bull spreading and the cash market and the demand side of the equation. And this logically and naturally makes sense, because if you factor in the weekly export sales, the Thursday corn purchases and the Friday corn purchases of just China alone, and then the total weekly export sales, you're talking about 223 million bushels, or about 14-15% of the U.S. carryover. So again, it seems a lot like soybeans 3 or 4 months ago, when the trade was worried about taking U.S. carryover too low. I think the trade is playing this wisely by running that front end up, trying to get as much old crop corn as possible from producers.
So are we at a point where we think we start rationing? Because it doesn't look like that's the case yet.
You're not rationing, I don't think, in the export market, Todd. I think you are starting to ration in the domestic market. I noted that the fundamental reason, in my opinion, why Friday saw the turnaround from the corn not making a new high and taking out that 550 and a half level, it was because of the beans, and especially because of the wheat. I think we can lay at the feet of the wheat the reason for the turnaround, because the wheat corn spread got down to $1.09. That was about the last support that I had until you go all the way down to a dollar. Well, at $1.80, somewhere around there, the feeders really kick into gear of buying wheat for feed instead of corn. And I think similarly, the ethanol numbers this week would suggest we're not sending out as much into the gas tanks of the United States driver, and therefore we're not blending as much and we're not producing as much ethanol. So I think domestically we are rationing usage. It's just the export market is so red hot.
So the export market leading the grains higher, oilseeds as well. However, the Dow, while it's up on the top end, experienced some pretty heavy losses today.
Yes, and you don't know whether this is because of the first full week of a new administration, or you don't know whether it's because of some of the shenanigans and the short-term traders and the shorts versus the longs with some of the new platforms we have. This is one of the things we're going to have to really watch in February. There's really three things to watch in February: the weather and the drought situation here in the United States, the weather drought situation in Brazil. February is a key month if some of these high estimates of 133 million tons, 132 million tons of soybean production in Brazil is actually going to materialize. I'm not there yet. I can't get above 130 until I see some key areas get some additional rains and follow through rains. The second thing would be the fiscal stimulus. If we don't get fiscal stimulus in the next 15 to 20 days, in my view, the stock market especially and some of the inflation bulls especially will probably start to give up and start to take some profit off the table. And then the third thing, obviously, is we've got a lot of USDA talking going on between the WASDE report, the baseline projections at the middle of the month, and then we have the Agricultural Outlook Forum, I think, on the 18th and 19th. So lots of longer-term fundamentals and a lot of information from USDA to see if they get more real-time on the export demand for corn and wheat in particular.
How has the livestock sector been handling the upward movement in both corn and soybean markets?
Well, it has been putting a futures premium on the cash market. And I think this is where the funds have been coming in and buying into the cattle and hogs and the feeders. The hogs have a rationalization with the cutout being very sharply higher. I think it's up to last October, last September's levels of the mid-80s. And so the pork cutout is helping the cash hog market, which is helping the futures. But you've got a $4 to $5 premium in the fat cattle. You have a $5 to $7 premium in the feeder cattle futures. So I think the spreads continue to play very, very strong. But the funds have also decided to go ahead and buy what I think is mainly on technical indicators.
Over the last year or so, the price of crude oil has climbed steadily. Does that impact the ethanol market at all?
Yeah, this is a really neat thing we're going to have to talk about in 2021, I think. And this is some of the research I'm pulling out the price theory books and the macroeconomic books on, is that if we have energy policy shifting and consumption going down, does that mean there are going to be fewer ethanol blenders, fewer oil refiners, to the point where initially prices actually go up and it actually supports the corn market, supports the ethanol market, supports the crude oil market? But at the same time, those higher prices and fewer producers eventually will create an area where you will go down in price. And that's one of the things that I'm going to be working on here the next couple months.
Oh, I will be looking forward to hearing about that. Thank you so much for being with us.
Great to be with you, Todd. Have a good weekend.
You too. That is Mike Zuzulow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com. Joined us from his office in Atchison, Kansas. On this Friday afternoon, we're joined by Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Hey, finally, Eric, and I think you mentioned this in December, you will be glad to have those two snow throwers that you have on hand, because looks like we could possibly get snow, but there is definitely going to be snow somewhere this weekend, right?
Well, I'll tell you this. There's been a lot of meteorologists, especially along the East Coast, who have lost their jobs for getting the rain-snow line wrong. And I'm just thankful that right now I'm not in a situation where that can happen, because I think if you are on the northern side of I-74 versus the southern side, I'm talking like one section over, it's going to be vastly different. And if I don't get to use my snowblower in Mahomet, I might just throw it in the truck, drive 10 miles north, and I bet you there's going to be some people there that could really, you know, use my help getting the snow off the driveways and off the sidewalks, because it's just a very tricky system. And by the way, the one that's going to hit us, this is the one that just pummeled California, where we've seen some reports at 10 feet. That's right, 10 feet of snow in the Sierra Nevada. So this was a potent one. And it's not done here, by the way. So as it slides through, and I'll give you the details in a second, it's actually going to hit the East Coast, too, by the end of the week. So this one got the whole of the U.S. except for Alaska and Hawaii. But yeah, you go just north of here, our chances of seeing accumulating snows maybe in the, not just the 3 to 6 inch range, but a couple of pockets over 9 inches, I think is a real possibility. Best target's probably going to be coming slicing right around Kankakee or from there to about I-80. And then as you head over to Indiana, you can go a little bit farther south, maybe toward Indianapolis, and that's going to be the heaviest corridor of snow from this next system that comes through. So yeah, it's one of those weekends where I was just talking with my colleague Andrew Pritchard, and I said we could be on Slush Fest right here in Champaign, but a little north of us could be good to go. And I'll tell you, if the low goes just, 10 miles further to the south than where it's currently forecast, then everything I just told you is off, and we're going to get a bunch of snow. So that's where we are, and this is going to happen Saturday into Sunday.
And then what happens after that?
Well, we've not had much of a winter so far. Here we are at the end of January. We're going to be into February before we actually get, I'd say, our first real shot at colder. Now, we've had a couple of clear nights where the winds have calmed down and it's been chilly in the morning, but the sun has come out lately, warmed things up, and I just don't think the sun's going to be able to outdo the colder that's building up in the Canadian prairie over the next 10 days. And so, therefore, it will get let out, not in the near term, but it will get let out once we get into that first full week of February. And as it does so, I'll tell you this, I'm just glad I don't own a cow-calf operation in the Dakotas or in the Canadian prairie or Montana, or even getting down toward parts of Illinois and Iowa, because the temperatures coming through, that'd be a rough first couple of days here to be born on Earth and have to deal with some of the temperatures we're going to be seeing. I still think it comes in relatively quick shots. In other words, it may stick around for 3, 4, 5 days. I don't think we're going to be stuck in brutal cold for like a whole month, but there's plenty of cold air that's on tap that's going to be arriving once we get into February.
Yeah, speaking of February, next Tuesday is Groundhog's Day. Any indication of what Punxsutawney Phil might see? Or and it varies across the country, but it is February the 2nd.
That's right. Yeah. You know, it's a fun tradition, right? We wake a hibernating large rat and ask its opinion of the weather. And there's a lot of people, of course, that you know, put a lot of stock in, and it's fun. I enjoy it. I'm glad we have some, you know, these traditions. But it's funny. We can look at the stats. Noah studied this and been doing this for over 130 years. Punxsutawney Phil took a break during the wars, which was good. But you look at all the statistics, he's been right about 38% of the time. Now, lately, I think he's hired a consultancy or a consultant service because, to be honest, he's been improving in his forecasting skill. But still, historically, you'd be better off to bet against Punxsutawney Phil. What I would tell you is some early indications. Now, this is just a preliminary thought, all right? Some early indications right now indicate that we could have a pretty quick go of it to start our next growing season. And that would be good. Let's get in early and get going. Some of the conditions, like the fading La Nina and some of the indications of a strong subtropical ridge over like the Caribbean, that tends to just get us good moisture early, good, you know, better warmer temperatures early, and allows us to get cranking. Now, that's just a preliminary thought. Of course, you and I will have many Fridays between now and then, but we can update that. But we'll see what Punxsutawney Phil says about it.
In South America, ending one season, depending on where you are, and beginning another, any new information maybe on long-range outlook for the month or for the quarter, for the season?
Yeah. Well, in South America, you're right. They're harvesting that first crop of soybeans, you know, mostly Mato Grosso. So they're behind. You know, you'd see them on probably the slowest pace in many, many years of getting it harvested. So we know that Safrina corn is going to go in late. The question is, what kind of conditions is it going to go in? And right now, it's relatively dry across much of Brazil's northern and eastern growing areas. And they've actually seen quite a bit of heat stress to the east. So it's not going to necessarily be the best conditions to go into until you get out about 10 days from now and moisture starts to return in the north. But it's actually going to be returning there while backing off in Argentina. I think the only place in South America that's seen consistently good, albeit at times very heavy rainfall, has been places like Mato Grosso do Sul, Parana, Rio Grande do Sul. That'd be Brazil's southern growing area, where about, maybe 40-45% of the soybean crop is grown. So that area has seen a lot of precip while we've been more dry to the north and to the east. Looking longer term, the European model is the outlier. It wants to give plenty of rainfall throughout the month of February to Brazil's central and northern growing areas and try to keep Argentina drier. And every other global model actually has the opposite. They want to let the drought continue north and keep putting the rain down south and in Argentina. So we've got a few benchmarks to measure against, but reliability right now in those models is just low because of the disagreements.
Are they better than Punxsutawney Phil?
You know what? Here's my answer to that. If Punxsutawney Phil could do this, or if the models could do this, they would both be billionaires, right? Because if we could just hit those forecasts, we could make big money in the grain markets and also in energy trading too. So it's really just the reality of it. In fact, I told my Uncle John this recently. He says, "Why is it so hard?" I said, "Well, you're trying to predict the future behavior of a nonlinear chaotic fluid. That's the atmosphere. It is impossible." So there you go.
Before I let you go, anything on Argentina?
Well, I think Argentina got some just-in-time rains. And the only thing that was hurt, I think, was maybe the earliest planted corn and soybeans, which maybe is about 10% of that crop. The rains over the next 10 days will be absolutely critical. It's like us getting rain in July, so they need to be getting good moisture here. And if they don't, after that, it does look drier, and I've got some concerns moving forward, especially with the fading La Nina.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions.